Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour on this Wednesday, the 5th day of October, 2011. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. A proposal to raise property taxes in Sitka was defeated nearly 2-1 last night. That's the unofficial result of Sitka's municipal elections, which also saw all incumbents return to their seats and the addition of a few new faces. KCAW's Ed Bronco reports.
Proposal 1 would have raised Sitka's property tax cap, granting the Assembly the power to raise taxes by a half mil. Doing so could have brought in an extra $500,000 a year to help pay for a new roof at Sitka Community Hospital and for repairs to Sitka's roads. More than 1,000 people, roughly 62% of voters last night, said no to the proposal, and it went down to defeat. Mike Reif led the race for Assembly with more than 1,200 votes, about 45%. Pete Esquiro came in second with 1,071, or 40%. Both will serve 3-year terms. Reif said his first place finish tells him a lot of people in the community support him.
But also tells me that there are people in the community that I have to work in meeting their needs too. Very pleased, very humbled, and ready to go to work.
Esquiro said he was grateful that voters returned him to the Assembly and that the failure of Proposal 1, the property tax measure, means that there will be lots of work for the new Assembly to do.
Well, we're still going to need a roof on the hospital. You know, maybe it's not this year, but it's sometime very soon. And I'd like us to sit down and have a good discussion about, you know, where we go and how we take care of that issue.
The same, he said, will be true for the city's roads. Phyllis Hackett also returns to the Assembly, but for 1 year, occupying the third open seat after a successful write-in campaign that earned her a quarter of last night's vote, beating out fellow write-in candidate Gary Paxton by just 1 percentage point, or 53 votes.
Well, write-in is really challenging. It's a lot more difficult, and I had a lot of really good support and appreciate all the help I got. Had I been just on my own trying to wage a campaign, I don't think I would have had nearly as good a showing. It's hard to let people know that you're writing in. It's hard for people to remember that when they get to the polls, even if they would vote for you if your name were on the ballot. So it's a lot more challenging.
Andrew Traugott garnered 15% of last night's Assembly tally with 417 votes. Over to the school board race now, where voters gave Tim Fulton a second term with 43%. Tanya Ryu will join the board, earning election with 32% of the vote. Nearly a quarter of voters cast ballots for Lillian Feldpouch, who did not win election last night. The results are unofficial and, for the moment, incomplete. Some 253 absentee ballots still need to be counted. That number could conceivably swing the third Assembly seat from Hackett to Paxton, but the margins are too large in the other races for the absentees to change any results. The absentee ballots are scheduled to be counted on Friday. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
And if you missed any of those numbers, you can have another look at the unofficial election results on our website at kcaw.org. KCAW News heard from one of the communities in our listening area holding elections yesterday. In Pelican, Karen Stepanenko has won a 3-year term on the city council with 27 votes. Eric Peterson will also take a 3-year seat with 25 votes. The unsuccessful candidates in the city council race were Derek Stewart with 22 votes and Patricia Phillips with 14. On the Pelican School Board, Cheryl Young has taken a 1-year term with 41 votes. Kenneth Wolfe will serve 3 years. He won 39 votes. The third seat on the Pelican School Board was a write-in contest. Vinny and Adie Werda appears to be the top vote-getter with 11 votes. Election results for Pelican are unofficial until certified by the council. Other communities in our listening area to hold elections yesterday were Angoon, Tanaki, Cake, and Port Alexander. KCAW News will pass on those results as soon as we receive them. For the past week, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council has been meeting in Unalaska. No action there has been more controversial than the announcement that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration wants to put off the implementation of a new halibut catch share plan. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez caught up with some of the users who, for better or worse, will be affected by that delay.
When it comes to establishing a new halibut catch sharing plan in southeast and south central Alaska, doing nothing might be almost as controversial as acting. That became clear last Wednesday when the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced that the agency wanted more time to review the plan, which would integrate the way the commercial and charter fleets are managed and change the way the catch is allocated. The request was made at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting being held in Unalaska, and opinion among the advisory panel's members was split. For some charter operators and sport fishermen, the status quo is a good thing. It keeps a rule that would have their catch from going into effect. Tim Evers represents the Deep Creek Charter Boat Association on the Kenai Peninsula. He says that many in his region are relieved that they get to keep their two fish a day limit, at least for a little while longer.
It's been difficult up to this meeting for them to book trips for next year, and then with the information that came out of this meeting, their telephones were ringing and they're booking trips.
Commercial halibut fishermen are less excited for the delay. Jeff Barver is a crew member on a longliner based out of Sitka.
It's the same things over and over again. You're never going to get economic studies that are going to show if a sport caught fish is more valuable. You could evaluate that forever. To me, it's being hung up by politics, which shouldn't trump conservation of the resource. So it's how it can best be utilized. I would say implement the catch share plan that was voted on 10-1 at the council and move on with it, because it's been 16, 17, 18 years.
He says they've already seen their quota shrink, and they're unhappy to bear most of the burden when it comes to cuts in the halibut harvest levels. Julianne Curry is the executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association, and she says that a decision to further delay the implementation of the catch share plan is having a noticeable impact on fishermen in her region.
People already are going out of business. We have guys down in Southeast, and there's guys in 3A also who are thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt right now. I know one of my members has been purchasing 2C quota over the years to establish himself as a viable entity in the halibut game, and he's $500,000 in debt, and he's not covering his quota share payments. I'm not covering my quota share payments. I don't have any quota left. There's not enough left for me, so I'm done.
Evers of the Deep Creek Charter Boat Association says he's sympathetic to that, and that many charter boat operators understand that all sectors are going to have to see reductions in the amount of the halibut they can take if they want to conserve the resource. But he also added that sport fishermen who travel to the state to catch halibut don't fully understand how complicated resource management is in Alaska. He says that they think
that their priorities would be number one, and any other user groups kind of fall in below that. And over the years of management of the resource, they haven't really adapted to understanding about the conservation ends of it. They just want and want and want and more and more and more. It's recreational. And it's hard for them to understand what takes place to other user groups. So it's a difficult situation.
The many competing interests of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, and charter boat operators over a resource as limited as halibut are exactly why resolution has been such a struggle to achieve. Glenn Merrill is the head of NOAA Sustainable Fisheries Division in the Alaska region, and he was the one who delivered the news about the delay. He says that NOAA received thousands of letters about the plan. That overwhelming amount of testimony and disagreement helped push NOAA to decide to slow down the implementation process.
We received lots of letters from groups, 40, 50, 60, 70-page letters that go line by line and lay out their specific case and their specific issues of concern as well. So there was a great deal of participation by the public in this process. And that's the reason that this rule is under revision, and we're going to look at it through the council process.
A timeline for review of the plan will likely be set on Tuesday as the North Pacific Council wraps up.
That was Alexandria Gutierrez. Cut off a little short there. A silent hike through the forest, popping kelp, and up-close views of marine mammals. All some of the experiences shared recently by a group of Sitka Girl Scouts. Cadet Troop 4137 and some senior Girl Scouts went to Glacier Bay with the help of a First Bloom grant. Jasmine Shaw was one of the chaperones of the trip. She sent back this audio postcard.
My name is Jasmine Shaw, and I'm an AmeriCorps volunteer. I went up to Glacier Bay with the Girl Scouts. Barbara Morse, one of the Girl Scout troop leaders here in Sitka, organized the trip, and she needed some extra adult chaperones. So I had been volunteering with the troop this whole last year, and so I got to go along on the trip.
Who's got short boots on? Everybody got short boots? Okay, so you're going to need to put it down.
We kayaked. There was the orientation getting into the boats, and there were a couple collisions at first, getting out of the bay.
We're gliding!
Glacier Bay is just teeming with wildlife, so you don't have to go very far.
Yeah. We saw sea otters, we saw harbor porpoise, and we saw what kind of whale?
Humpback.
Humpback whale, good.
We decided to try to imitate the sound of the breath of the harbor porpoise because they're so stealthy in the water. We weren't able to capture it, you know, on the audio soundscape itself. And so we decided we'd be the harbor porpoises to demonstrate what they sound like.
When my arms go up, we exhale. When they come down, we inhale. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
And we stopped and talked about, you know, kelp, picked up kelp and looked at all the different critters.
When my hand goes up, we're going to spend 3 seconds making as much popping pop weed noise as we can. All right, ready, set. Great.
We also went on a couple hikes, and one was a silent hike, and so the girls got to hike in silence in the forest, so that was a new experience for a lot of them, too. A lot of them heard things they had never heard before in the forest. I think some liked it more than others, definitely, but that when we did the reflection at the end, they all said they felt closer to nature. A lot of them, this was their first Girl Scouts trip away from home, and so I think it just revved them up for getting excited about other possibilities here. It was important for the girls as a troop, too. They're transitioning into high school, and so a lot of them drop out at Girl Scouts, out of Girl Scouts at that point. And so to be able to do a trip like this kind of takes them or shows them what Girl Scouts can continue to offer them through their high school years.
And you're going to think of the first thought and best thought that comes to your mind about the glaciers that